So sorry. I'm telling you, in a year, I'm going to be in a wheelchair and like
Don't say
turning my
that. Nope.
oxygen on and off.
You are listening to Feeding the Mouth That Bites You with Ashley Parrish and Jessica Pfeiffer,
a weekly podcast guide on parenting teens and launching them into the world. As always, we are joined by psychologist and author, Dr. Ken Wilgus.
Hey, everyone, and welcome back. On today's episode, we're going to be discussing how to talk to your teenager so they'll listen.
I think this is a really applicable episode for every parent out there. I think this is something that I struggle with on the daily. I know we get a lot of questions about this via email or on social media about communicating with our teenagers, that they're not listening to us, or,
right.
Mm-hmm. You know, or that we've handed them a list of freedoms. And so now I've let go of that area. And so now I can't say anything about that area anymore,
which that might comes be up in my office all the time.
But parents feel like they can't communicate with their kids, or that they don't have the right to speak into their kids' lives anymore once they've handed over a list of freedoms.
Right, right.
Yeah.
You know, and you were kidding me earlier that you can tell I'm getting older, because I hear the same questions over and over again, and I have to kind of like quit being frustrated. These people don't know that you've already heard this 1,000 times this year. And this is a common one. Like, hey, Dr. Mm-hmm. Wilgus, we gave the freedom over, mm-hmm. and now I feel like I can't say anything. Wrong, opposite. It should work where you can say stuff. But, you know, there was a really foundational book, still good, called How to Talk So Children Will Listen and How to Listen So Children Will Talk. I think it's the other mm-hmm. way around. Anyway, it's based on the work of a good psychologist named Haim Ganot. And that's really important, because they did a teenage version of that, How to Talk So Teenagers Will Listen. But it's one of those published, hey, let's do the same thing. Well, it didn't have the same. There's some specific skills, really, to talking to teenagers in the way that they will listen to you. And it's important to kind of differentiate that from just general listening skills, which is good. Paying attention to your children. You know, most parents are really working. You can see parents of young children working hard, a lot of them, to not be what their parents were. Like, wait, everyone, stop. My little princess has something to say and I want to listen. And well, good for you. That's great. But when it comes to teenagers, you really want to be just as skilled. And it's not the same thing in how to really just get across the information you're trying to tell them. Most of the time, the things that the parents I'm working with are that they're saying to their teenagers that's so frustrating to their teenagers, they're just trying to give them advice, just good information, that if there was a way for that teenager to hear it, it would help your kid.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. Well, and Dr. Ken, I would think that you're definitely the expert on how to get teens to listen to you by the way you approach them. You know, I'm sure that you have a lot of teenagers that you're trying to get some advice across to them.
Right.
But we parents sometimes don't do that in the right method.
Well, and of course,
I know I don't.
My first trick, number one, is don't be their parent. I'm not their parent, so I have an advantage. Like, hey, I'm not your dad. So, but I'll remind you that one of the things, you know, the methods I use that is similar to parents is that I always talk about my four rules in there. And teenagers are like, you have rules? Oh yeah, four rules. Rule number one, you don't have to talk to me about anything you don't want to talk about. Well, that's a dumb rule. Like, of course, that's just true. But I need him to know, or her to know, that I know that. So that'd be the same thing with teenagers. When you're trying to, so two things. Number one, if you're talking to them about something they're on restriction for, like you came in an hour late and here's the deal, you need very few words. You don't need to say many words. It doesn't take many words to go, so that's 30 minutes late. And we've already talked about that. You're grounded the next weekend night. See ya. That's it. Lots of words like, you know, your mother was crying while you were gone. Or we just, you know, do you care at all about God? And I don't know what your speech is, or pulling out your verse. But you can't imagine how close their ears are to that. That is not a moment that they're listening. It's usually a moment that I really want to say this because I think it's an important thing for me to say, but it's you're kind of wasting your words. So when it's a restriction, use few words. But most of the other stuff is just things I want to, hey, that thing bothered me and I want to tell you this, or hey, you know, I see you upset and I'm trying to help you. That's all what I would call advice giving. And advice giving is like my first rule in my office. Hey, you don't have to listen to this if you don't want to. And you see, you don't have to start with that, but you know, I've said before, my favorite signal, I probably said it to my teenagers a lot, is when it was something I wanted to advise them about, I would start with kind of an apology. Hey, you know, I'm a psychologist, so I probably worry about stuff. And so this may be dumb to you, but so that first signals, A, what I'm about to tell you isn't a have to, and it's my thought, it's my opinion. And I even, you know, signal that you may disagree with it. All of that is all signaling that we're about to have a talk that's not a requirement thing. Because you really have to keep in mind for many of your teenagers, if you pay attention, you know, think about this. If you just say tonight, you know, around, I don't know, 6 p.m., you know, before dinner, say, hey, you need to come here just a sec. I need to talk to you. How do you think your teenager is going to hear that? You know, how many of your teenagers will bound in going, yeah, what is it, Mom? I mean, it's not, is there a present? You know, it's not that. They assume that there's something negative. So that's what you're going on. That's why you have to reassure them. It's not like you're starting with just a friendly chat. And what are you so uptight about? They assume if you want to talk to them that there's probably something they don't want to hear. So signaling that this thing is not a requirement, not a speech, not a have to, is really important every time you talk. That's just step one. Does that surprise you?
Let me clarify and ask you a question. So every time I talk to my kids, so what if that makes sense? If I'm talking to them about maybe a freedom I gave them, like you're free to choose your own friends,
right,
listen to the music, like that signal, like, hey, you know, you can listen to whatever you want, but the reason why I listen to what I listen to is because it really makes me feel uplifted instead of whatever.
Good. Yeah.
So what about if it's something that you haven't given them, an area you haven't given them freedom in, you're not giving advice giving in those areas. Like, let's say, you know, they're 14 and you've said no phone in your room or no phone after 9 p.m. You're not giving advice in those sort of situations.
No, as a matter of fact, you're giving very few words in that situation.
You're just giving boundaries and clear, definitive.
It's a good example where you end up with that mixed, so much of words are in the middle of, I don't know if this is a have to or advice giving. So let's say that, you know, it's 10:05 and the phone's still in the room, supposed to be on the charger at 10. That's not the time to go, you know, why is that phone so important to you? You know, we watched that. That is not a good start. that's not advice giving. They're not listening. They're only arguing. Yeah. So that's, you're exactly right. That's not when you say, hey, this is just me, but it's not just me. That's my phone. And look, it's 10:05. So I'll give you, you know, I'll look again in 5 minutes because you've lost an hour tomorrow. And if it's not on the charger within 5 minutes, you're going to lose it all day tomorrow. You know, whatever is the thing, but don't talk a bunch then. But I'm talking about the, I don't know what, 90% of everything else, things that just pop up. So to your point, Jessica, obviously the things that are on the freedoms list, I would definitely make sure you say that's up to you because you want to keep reinforcing that. They won't believe you on that freedoms list half the time. So you want to really keep finding ways to say, look, remember, that's your friends. How you choose. I talked to some parents yesterday whose kids seemed really touchy about a friend that she was hanging out with that they had already said, it's up to you. So yes, but on all the other stuff that isn't on any list, it's just, hey, that report you were doing, you know, on, you know, that report on socialism, you know, I was thinking, well, start those with, you know, this is just me, but, you know, just be aware of the unnecessary radiation that comes out of your mouth, that you can deradiate it with clarity of this thing I'm about to say is optional for you to agree with or not. And so even if it's not on a freedom list, just general rule stuff, try to be in the habit of if it's something important that you want to get across, then it actually helps if you'll signal briefly, get good at it, really, at signaling that this is my opinion, adult to adult, and I want to hear what you think. That's a really important first step. You don't have to agree with the thing I'm about to say. That's just step one. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And I think, you know, we've talked about communication before. We did episode 7, 8, and 9, actually a 3-part series on communication.
Right.
So if you haven't already, go back and listen to those. This isn't anything new that we haven't talked about. Dr. Ken always talks about advice giving, and I do think it's an art, and it's something that we continue to have to practice, because I know for me, it's been a struggle.
Well, there's usually two common, this is why this keeps coming up. My most favorite patterns of parents. Number one, it's usually a dad that's the cognitive walkthrough guy. So this is advice, right? Hey, you don't have to, how you handle your homework is up to you. We already told you that. I need you to tell me, can you just write out for me what your plan is for this weekend? Cause you've got all this stuff. So I want you to just tell me, I'm not saying you have to, that you have to do your homework or how you do. I just need you to tell me what your plan is. This is, there's tons of examples like that where, or the rhetorical question, dad, that's like, have you ever considered that when you're, you know, whatever, when you're late, everybody else has to wait for you. This is that, that's some, most of that is good advice, good information. And I think, I wish your teenager would hear you. But if you're doing that, that's one thing, the cognitive walkthrough, that teenagers can smell that a mile away. Like, you're going to make me think through things through your little grid, how you think I should think. And I don't want to do it. And so that, what's worse is that much of the time the teenager is compliant enough to, they just, it's like going to that class that you hated. You're like, yes, I understand. You're just following what you're, what they seem to be saying, but you're not helping them at all. And they're not really hearing you. And the other one, of course, is your good nurturing mother that isn't going to stop every time she says, wait a minute, did you get you? Did you know what the temperature is going to be tomorrow? Did you see that? It's going to be like, I'm just helping. I'm help. Why do I have to say that? Because
I'm helpful.
I mean, it, deep in my heart, I know I'm helpful. It's, you know, the, it's just trying to be helpful. And we've talked about how hard that is. Good nurturing moms. It just feels wrong to. What do I have to apologize for saying that? Kinda. It does help to say, hey, it's up to you how you want to handle it. But you know me, I watch the weather. And did you see the weather tomorrow? That's different from get a sweater. I'm not kidding. It sounds, if you do it a bunch, it sounds more and more like on these levels, not the restrictions, but on the non-restrictive, it sounds adult to adult. And that's your goal.
I have an example of this just yesterday. My daughter's been sick with a couple different illnesses over the last couple of weeks, which are just blowing through our schools right now.
Oh, yes.
And so I don't think it's necessarily just her body. It's just that there are lots of things going around. But of course, I had to give her my list of vitamins and supplements and things that she should be doing. You should be getting to bed early. I'd like for you to take, you know, more zinc. I heard that elderberry helps. All the things that she probably doesn't know all of it, but the
did
way
she
I
say, slow down,
it,
mom, I'm taking notes.
I was like, okay, all right, I got it. You know, but I'm like, and do you want me to set them out for you just so you remember, you know, like just so you don't forget what I'm telling you.
Cause you're not real smart, huh?
I'm really helpful. I'm really helpful. I know you're not paying attention to this stuff. She did ask a few questions like, why would I need to take that? And I'm like, well, because it helps with your immune system. And like, she doesn't know all of it, but I probably could have approached it a different way. Like, I don't know about you, but with all the stuff going around, I'm going to be taking these things. And
that's
so
what I recommend,
you know, here's the bottles if you need anything.
That's right. And again, it's not math. You know, both of you have bought lots of free of sort of leeway with your teenagers because you've made strong messages that I am seeking to treat you like an adult. So if you go a little bit out of the range, you know, and not advice giving, it's not terrible, but I strongly encourage that you sort of practice that where you're, you know, that's like what you're talking about with the supplements. That's just good for her to know. And I want the best shot of this kid hearing it. And so the best shot is that second way you just said it, instead of, you know, there's a lot of disease out there, whatever that starts with, you know, me, this helps me, but maybe it won't help you. And the whole key is it's a better chance they'll hear you by signaling you don't have to agree with what I'm about to tell you. And then the second thing you want to signal is what I'm about to tell you is my thought. It's not the universal world thought. And that's the part that teenagers are often touchy about. Remember, especially young teenagers have just reached formal operational thought. They're still playing with the idea of, wait a minute, people don't think the same way I do. There's like different perspectives. That's why they get so uptight about, you don't know me. There's, yeah, I know I don't know you. Is this, did you just grow into that a year ago? Of course not, but that's new to them. So when you're saying just general things like politics, again, mostly dads, that, you know, they're going to push back on that is not how every adult sees this. And it's better that you give the, not only signal one, you don't have to agree with me, but signal two, this is how I see it, is an important thing to continually tell them and remind them, especially on things that are hard. It's, you know, religion for a lot of us, you know, we're not religious because we think this is a good way to look at things. We're stuck with the, I think this is the truth of the universe. Well, it's tough to say, but that's how I see it when you're talking about the God of the universe. But it is truly, you know, each of us goes at it alone. So you have to talk to your teenager, even about your faith. Like, well, you know, that's not how your mother and I see it, because we're, you know, from Orthodox Christianity, what we've always believed is that can sound to some people weak. Like, it's not just my opinion. Well, it is kind of from your teenage perspective. It's your perspective. And you have to respect that they have to come up, come to their own perspective. So, you know, that's the, so number one, it's you can choose to not agree with me. And number two, it is only my view. And like I say, that's really hard. You know what I mean? When it comes to religion or politics, sometimes, you know, you really want to say, it's not just my belief. It's true. It's, well, okay. It's still going to be something that your kids have to kind of come to this themselves. They have to figure that out for themselves.
Dr. Ken, I have a question, and this is from a listener.
Me. Okay, yeah. I'm asking for a friend. Hashtag.
Every time our teen comes to us, is that an opportunity to give advice, or do we need to have the wisdom to know when to give advice and when to just listen?
Okay, that's a softball, and you're correct. That yeah, there's times it's best to just listen. And that probably could be a third one, which is give yourself permission. Remind yourself that by the age of 11 or 12, your children know most, if you're a family that's been raised together, and, you know, they know most everything that you believe. They know you're what's right, wrong, whatever, at least based on you. So you've done your job. So that does mean that if you let an entire discussion go by and you didn't throw out your belief on that thing, it doesn't mean you failed as a parent. That's a common, you're right. That's an autopilot left on. My job here is to, what topic? Yes, I'll teach. Well, I don't care that I'm not, my kid isn't listening. I don't care that even my spouse is going, are we going over this again? I need to do that. And you're right. It's an art to actually just listen. You know, you do that with a colleague or friend that you don't know super well, even someone you know well, you're not going to always jump in with your, when you're meeting with your friends going, that's not how I see it. You know, you'll let a whole thing go by because, hey, I'm not sure they agree with me. And what's the purpose of me always jumping in? Well, again, these teenagers are adults in training, young adults. So yeah, I think that's a good point. You need to be okay with sometimes not saying your opinion or your teaching on that thing, even if you're hearing something that's off.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know as a parent, sometimes I remind myself to like go into psychologist mode, like ask the questions instead.
What would Dr. Ken do?
So I'm sitting there and my kid's telling me about a social situation at school that's super frustrating. And I want to offer my advice. Well, if that was my friend, this is what I would do. And instead I'm like, well, what are you going to do? Well, how did that make you feel?
Yeah.
Well, what did you to say next? You know, asking all the probing questions without, so that they kind of come to their own decision on the matter, or they kind of come to their own conclusion.
Is that what y'all think I do in my office all the time?
I don't know. That's
the annoying guy going, how did that make you feel?
What did you,
if such a,
what was your experience?
Negative view of my profession.
But I've noticed when I'm talking to my oldest and she's telling me maybe a story that doesn't really involve her. It's two of her friends or her friend and her boyfriend, you know, and she's telling me this story. And if I start to open my mouth, she'll go, Mom, And I was like, I'm sorry, I'm listening.
I have to inhale, honey. Keep just going. Inhaling oxygen. What's the problem?
Keep going.
Well, you know, to that point, I would be careful. We are talking about just avoiding always teaching. But mm-hmm. when you do bring up the sort of be a therapist type, always remember there was a good study done on psychology grad students. And they did mock interviews, just therapeutic interviews when they first started the program. Then they took a year of psychotherapy classes. And then they did another video of them mock interviewing. And people rated how well they did. And the majority of them were worse after 1 year of psychotherapy training than just being themselves. So let's not think about it like being, I'm trying to be sort of shrinkish. It's the it's so annoying going, so I hear you saying that you're, shut up, mom. You heard me because I'm sitting right here. But again, yeah, you're right though. Just kind of just think about, this isn't about my opinion right now. Yeah. And I genuinely want to know what you think. Yeah.
Well, I think my natural inclination is either to give advice or to lecture or to train and teach, because that's what I did for 12 years.
That's right.
Like, we're going to apologize because this was wrong and here's why it's wrong and here's the scripture to back it up. Right. Yeah. And so I did all that. And now I'm teaching myself to, okay, they know what they're supposed to be doing. They have that playing in the back of their head. Right. They have my annoying voice in the back of their head.
It's a good example. Parents that I've had that are teachers, just like that. It's like, well, that's kind of what I am used to doing, you know, but a teenager is like, is that a slideshow you're doing? What are we doing here? You know, it's you're right. It's an instinct you have to kind of work against.
Yes.
Yeah. But I want my teen to always want to come and talk to me, that's and communicate with point. Me. Mm-hmm. And so to always reserve my advice giving for when it's really worth it, you know?
And I consider that, and that's why I wanted to talk about this today. I consider that advanced communication skills. If you're good at it, if you get really good at a natural way of saying, look, of course, this is just me, but if you get pretty good at that, Ashley, that's the goal. You want your teenager to be able to be free to come and talk to you. And knowing that she's not always going to say her opinion, but it's not going to be a creepy sort of, well, that's interesting. And like, I know you don't agree with me, you're just not saying, but a genuine, not always lecturing. And when I do say something, I own it. And I signal to you that that's my advice. And you may not agree. Those are, it's just the part that I think parents need to know is it's really effective. It's really surprising and helpful. And then the other one that I would mention, but with caution, is it is helpful to talk some about you. So, you know, you can mention that, well, I'm not as introverted as you are. So this has been my experience, or something that you refer to yourself. You want to be very careful with that. Don't do that much. The hardest is when you're constantly saying, oh, yeah, no, I had the same thing. I had trouble with friends. Here's what I did. Nope, that's not. Again, it's helpful to share about in a vulnerable way about what may be difficult for you about the topic, what may be even where you're ignorant about it, but something that, again, puts it on the level of this is an adult talking to an adult. This is an experienced, knowledgeable adult talking to a very ignorant and not very knowledgeable adult, but you don't have to say that all the time. Like, you know, hey, you're an adult. You're not very smart, but I mean, don't do that, but that it's all those things that say this is equal level, respectful talk together.
Mm-hmm. And all of this is training for when you have adult children, which I am learning. I have two kids in college. Yeah. And there are a lot of times that they say, this is what I've decided. And I have to bite my tongue really quick because I think, oh, that's not what I want you to do. I want you to do this other thing. And so,
if you don't, it affects the rest of your life with them. I work with many parents about their parents. Yeah. And it's really sad how often, you know, what often happens is the worst communication years where, you know, I can't talk to my dad, whatever, are all the years until he gets really old, sick and weak. And all of a sudden there's this kind of nice guy. And I have to deal with, you know, all the years that he was, and there's moms too. Moms can be difficult. That, you know, it's almost like I've said this over and over again, half of wisdom is just getting tired. It's like when you get you don't wait till you're tired and out of gas to realize that the whole world doesn't need to hear your opinion all the time. Your children aren't just captive audiences for you to keep telling them what to do. Let it go. Let them be their own, because like you said, Jessica, it's going to affect your relationship with your adult. When you're adults, you want your adult children to be able to talk to you. And it's great. I mean, my wife is always talking to our kids, our daughters, to be specific. Our son, he's a boy. What do you want? He's not going to, he's got to, but they're very close and it's great. Yeah. It's very cool because of, you know, when you've really respected that adultness, it's fun to have, you know, your adult kids contacting you, asking you, talking to you, sharing life with you.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think we get a little glimpse of that when they're teenagers and you start to give over those areas of freedom and your kids respond in a way that they're inviting you into the conversation because they know that you're not trying to take over their area of dominion. You know, they know that you're not going to be charging in and demanding they do things a certain way. And they offer you more information. They give you a glimpse into their thoughts and their ideas. Right. And it's just so much, I guess, more rewarding as a parent to have that kind of communication with your kids.
And I will throw this in, the part that has to be done, though, on limit setting, that, yes, we're talking, we're advice giving, all that kind of stuff. But then this kid, you know, went where she said she wasn't going to go and was with people she didn't tell she was going to be. It's not a deal killer. It's not a communication killer for you to, in a very few words, say, by the way, we found out that you weren't where you said you're going to be. So you're grounded for X amount. And then you're back. That it's doesn't have to be a tension of, if I say limit setting things, it's going to crush our communication. No, it's not. That they can, you can do both of those things.
Okay. One question that I don't think we directly answered about setting boundaries. Okay. Let's say your kid comes in late, or that you realize they were somewhere they weren't supposed to be, that they didn't tell you they were going to be. My temptation as a parent is to go back and say, what were you thinking? Why were you there? Who were you with? Ask 1 million questions.
Sure.
Is that the appropriate time to do it immediately when it happens? Should I wait till the next day? Should I think about all my questions and have a sit down conversation?
Yeah.
How do we address something that's a serious boundary that's been crossed?
That's a tough one, because the time you'll want to do it is right then, because you're upset. And it would help me if there was something my kid could tell me, that I kind of can understand this now, you know, okay. So you had a friend, it's something, but you're doing it for you, not for your kid. And so the time is not at the moment they've come home. Definitely not, gosh, I can't tell you how many examples of 1 a.m. hour and a half talks, quote unquote. Those weren't talks. You might as well just handcuff them and started the camera on this police interrogation. It's not a talk. So the time to do it is later. And I've had some really good examples of parents say, I am freaking out. We'll have to let you know how long this grounding is, because it's going to be big. Let's go to bed. And that's good. You know, we're done for then. But then, you know, the next day or whatever, you probably do better to lay out what the grounding or what the limit setting is going to be. And this is a different topic, but limit setting isn't you're grounded forever. It's, you know, put an end point on it. It's going to be 2 weeks. So that means a week from this next Saturday, you're done. So that's out of the way. Now that's what the limit's going to be. Then I do think it's important to say, look, I know you don't have to tell me. And, you know, and you could lie to me if I really pressed. And so I don't want to get into that. But this is really upsetting me. And I don't quite understand. Is there something you could tell me as to how this happened or whatever? That's actually much more possible. That, believe it or not, what were you really doing and all that stuff, that you can't require them to tell you that. And giving the message of you're going to tell me, it sometimes works a little bit, but mostly what you get is what's called plausible deniability. They'll just tell you the portion enough that it feels like we had a good talk, but I'm not actually telling you the whole thing. So if you really want to know, first do the limit setting. This is your punishment and it's not negotiable. That's it. Okay. And then after a couple hours, I would go in and try to, and I would do that as advice giving. I would, or really just open. You don't have to talk to me about it. I know you don't want to, but it, you know, I just don't understand what you were thinking. That it, it sounds much more like that. Is that mm-hmm. what you're thinking, Jess?
When that is helpful. Yeah. Yes.
It's hard.
There are situations like that where you think, I need to deal with it right now. I've been that person at 1 a.m. saying, right. What were you thinking?
Right.
And then I want an explanation and I want them to walk through their thoughts with me on why they would have done that or what made them think that they could get away with that. You know, what was going on? And that clearly it's never turned out well for me.
Well, and the emotion you're wrestling with is fear, mm-hmm. but your teenager thinks that you're angry. Because it looks the same. Anger is always the second emotion, such a shrinkish thing to say, but it comes out as anger. So when you're talking and what were you thinking? And they tell you something that's, well, I was just thinking that if I can, you know, break the sound barrier with my car, I could probably something that you're like, what, you know, it's best to get up and go, okay, that's scaring me. Sorry. I'm going to have to go take a walk. I don't want to get all upset here. With they say something that, you know, you'll hear stuff that you'll be tempted to go, what is wrong with you? Why would you think, you know, whatever. And you want, it's better to go, wait, I think I need to stop. That's scary for me to hear. And that's not going to help you. So I'll be back, you know, label it. It scares me. You're my child. Mm-hmm. I love you. You're an adult. I can't make sure you never do these things, but this is what you're seeing in me is fear. Dads really should do that because dads love to come across scary. But mm-hmm. we're afraid. It's always fear.
Mm-hmm. That's good. I think that's very true. Well, this conversation has been very helpful to me personally. I'm going to take this with me into my afternoon, actually, because I'm sure I'll have a conversation with my kids where I think I really want to tell them what I think. And I need to back off and just listen maybe, or cushion it in such a way that I let them know that they're still in charge. Thank you, Dr. Ken. Thank you, Ashley.
Thanks for joining us today. Hit the subscribe button so you won't miss an episode. Also, leave us a review. This is how other listeners find our podcast. Follow us on Instagram at Feeding the Mouth.
We appreciate you and would love to hear from you. If you have any questions, thoughts, or ideas about what we've discussed today, please email us at podcast@feedingthemouth.com.